There is a battle going on today for the heart and soul of America, and the right side must win. It's time for America Can We Talk with Debbie Georgiadis. On America Can we talk truth about America and why it matters to you. America Can We Talk starts now.
And good evening and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiadis, and Happy New Year. You know, I don't really enjoy New Year's Eve that much, but I love New Year's Day. I love that feel that once a year, at least, we give ourselves permission to kind of refresh, start over, make resolutions, change things we have been doing that weren't the things we want to be doing, and move forward. Well, I have some New Year's, in this first five today, I have some New Year's resolutions for America. And I want to talk about the theme of this, what I think this should be the political theme for the conservatives who now are starting January 20th, will have the White House, the Congress, and the Senate, is I think we have to have a leadership that is characterized by being bold, persistent, and vigilant. Those three qualities are needed not just during the campaign cycle, but right now and for the next 4 years. Bold, persistent, and vigilant. You know, you think about why Donald Trump won, or let me go back to a second. You think why Hillary Clinton didn't win. Leaving aside all of the arguments about Russia and Comey or whatever else the left is trying to claim, the truth is America rejected the path the country was on. They rejected the socialist, weak country. They rejected weak foreign policy. They rejected the collectivist attitude. They wanted a freshness in the way we think about America. And really, it wasn't just Hillary Clinton that lost, but there were, as I mentioned, other shows, many cases in which Republicans are winning state houses, they're winning majorities in the state legislatures, because Republicans are offering something new and fresh and bold, and we have to follow up on that. Well, on tonight's show, I want to talk about several things that I really think, and part of this bold, persistent, vigilant agenda that needs to be followed, several things that we, as supporters, as a political activist, as patriotic Americans, we need to encourage and support our country to do. So we're going to talk about a lot of them tonight. One is repealing Obamacare. Later in the show tonight, I'm going to spend a segment explaining to you that repealing Obamacare can be done with one sentence and a bill ready for President Trump to sign on the day of inauguration. We're going to talk about the plan the Heritage Foundation came up with, and I'm going to explain it to you as well as I can. It's, of course, complex, like all legislative things are, but it can be done, and this is something that must be done. Number two, we need to unleash American energy and jobs in the energy sector. We're going to be talking with Dr. Merrill Matthews, about some of the ways to repeal regulations that have really restricted energy development in America. We need to actually secure the southern border and put into place the idea of Americans first, job security and job creation. We need to talk about protecting America from Islamic aggression, both here and abroad. We're going to be speaking this evening with John Guandolo, founder of Understanding the Threat. And in this very next segment after this break, I'm going to tell you about a class I attended putting on by Understanding the Threat. You would hardly believe, I'll just give you a little tease, one person who's at Understanding the Threat went undercover and for 8 years worked in a mosque in the East Coast in Virginia, pretended to be a convert to Islam, and learned about so much what Islam actually teaches and what Islam teaches people to say to the world about Islam. It's simply mind-blowing. We also have to be talking about, in this first election, after the election of Donald Trump and the GOP holding the White House, the Congress, and the Senate, we have major work to do to take care of the problem that's been created in the last years of racial divisiveness, racial division. We need to stand up for our police officers in this country. We need to return to respect and encouragement of support for police officers, while at the same time, of course, being sure that if there is a police officer, an incident where an officer engages in illegal activity or discriminatory activity, we get after that. But we need to reinvigorate the police department, and we need to speak boldly about unifying America, ending the racial division that was very intentionally caused by the Obama administration over this last 8 years. I also, as this bold and persistent and vigilant agenda to get America back on track, we need to be talking about renewing the idea of the inner cities, low-income areas. We need to embrace and include those communities in the American dream. And that means we have to work on school choice, giving better quality education to the lowest, lowest income, the most vulnerable among us. Our job as a society is to be sure we have these young people emerging with the potential to participate in our American dream, the potential to participate in our economy through quality schools, school choice, introducing competition. And with respect to schools, there's just so much that can be done in these first 4 years under President Trump. And America's watching because, you know, when the Democrats, when President Obama won in 2008, they worked at lightning speed to get the social, the takeover of the healthcare system, crammed down the throats of Americans. Poll after poll after poll said America said, no, don't do this. We don't want the federal government control over the healthcare system. The Democrats went with their agenda. They didn't wait to see if they'd get Republicans or even the people to agree. Well, you know, Obamacare was a bad idea. What President Trump has proposed is many, many good ideas. And all of us need to get behind supporting him, supporting his ability to have these ideas take shape in legislation in this country, take shape and make the bold changes to America that the voters in this country embraced. I'm Debbie Georgiatis. This is America Can We Talk? When we come back, I'm going to tell you a little bit about John Guandolo and understanding the threat. It is so important to understand. It's one of the main promises Trump made during his campaign to protect us against Islamic immigration. And there's so much more we can do. Talk to you after the break.
On August 2nd, 2006, Debbie Lee was notified that her son, Mark Allen Lee, had been killed, becoming the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq. She had no choice about the news that was given to her, but she did have a choice how she responded. In response to her son's amazing last letter, she founded America's Mighty Warriors to honor the sacrifices of our troops, the fallen, and their families by providing programs that improve quality of life, resiliency, and recovery. Whether America's Mighty Warriors is hosting retreats for families of the fallen, helping heroes heal who are struggling with traumatic brain injury or post-traumatic stress disorder, providing relaxation at the Heroes Hope Home, stepping in when an injustice is committed, or doing random acts of kindness. As Mark mentioned in his letter, they know the price of freedom and who pays it. Our troops and families of the fallen need your support. Visit americasmightywarriors.org today to learn more. That's americasmightywarriors.org.
There's a lot of talk today among media, in academia, in our culture, about everything that is supposedly wrong with America. Political correctness tries to dictate that we must stop thinking that America is exceptional. America's bravest have our back in the air, at sea, and on land. But who has America's back in the culture? In schools, on cable television, in newspapers? It's time to end the greatest prejudice on earth, anti-Americanism. And who makes the case for America? Flag does. Flag is the foundation for liberty and American greatness. Flag has America's back on the cultural battlefield. Flag is a nonprofit battle tank working to change the cultural and media narrative about America. If you think it's time to stand up for America, join the Foundation for Liberty and American Greatness. Your support of Flag is an investment in the America your children will inherit. Visit their website at flagusa.org and consider donating. All donations are...
If you want to get at the issues that really matter for women and men, go to IWF.org. That's the Independent Women's Forum. IWF is all about increasing the number of American women who value free markets and personal liberty. IWF's motto is all issues are women's issues. They bring a fact-based approach to politics, policy, and culture. When the left tried to peddle a phony war on women, IWF shot back with facts and figures. American women aren't victims in need of ever-increasing government protection, and IWF doesn't think things are perfect, but they believe that individual liberty is the key to prosperity and fulfillment. Along with their sister organization, Independent Women's Voice, IWVoice.org, which is a leader in the fight against Obamacare, they offer policy papers, op-eds, and a popular blog on issues of the day. So visit IWF at IWF.org. That's IWF.org.
If you're a business owner, I want you to imagine standing on home plate in front of a sold-out crowd of 50,000 raving fans at a professional baseball game. They give you the microphone and you have 60 seconds to tell the crowd why they should do business with you. Out of 50,000 people, do you think you might get some new customers? Sure you would. Now imagine you could do that in front of four sold-out baseball games. That's 200,000 people. Did you know that's how many people listen to 660 AM The Answer every week? And you have the opportunity to stand in front of the 660 AM The Answer microphone and get 60 seconds to tell our raving fans all about your business. Do you think you'd get new customers if you did that? You bet. The businesses you hear on 660 AM The Answer are knocking it out of the park with new customers. If you're open to seeing how much it costs to advertise your business on 660 AM The Answer, send an email request to advertise@ksky.com. That's advertise@ksky.com. Let's play ball.
660 AM The Answer. 660 AM The Answer.com.
Can you hear us now?
And welcome back to America Can We Talk? And again, Happy New Year. I want to give a hat tip to my son, Daniel Georgiadis, who actually sent me an email with a link to this article. It's by Victor Davis Hanson, and it was in the National Review, but it's an article called Animal Cunning and the Instinct of Donald Trump. I got to tell you, folks, you know, what this article hits on is why this most unlikely of candidates emerged as the victor in the 2016 presidential election cycle. And some of the things that Donald Trump spoke about resonated with the American people. Contrary to what the media and the left try to claim, what Donald Trump did is he made Americans feel like, I'm with you. I'm on your side. I want there to be jobs. He spoke about, we love our miners as in people who work in coal mines. We love our veterans. He spoke to us like we're the American family. He spoke about the forgotten man, and many people feel that way. They still feel that way, that there's a faraway government in Washington regulating and ruling and ordering them around, and they want to have that robust, liberty-based American society back. He spoke about fair trade and illegal immigration in ways that people could relate to. He also very directly and persistently attacked political correctness. If there's one thing he can never be accused of, Donald Trump, it is being too politically correct. He was not. And he just kind of broke a lot of barriers. He made people more comfortable talking about issues they've been kind of bullied into not talking about. And one of those issues has to do with the aggression of radical Islam. And I'm going to tell you that we have coming up in the next segment a recording. And I will tell you that I pre-recorded this interview with John Guandolo just yesterday. And the reason I'm telling you that is because in the second segment, we got going kind of long and we ended up having to cut off. He wasn't quite done making a point, but we have, you know, hard breaks in the show. So it gets a little bit cut off at the second after his second segment. But I mean, it was a fabulous interview and you just can't believe how much this guy knows. And you'll hear from him in a moment. I want to tell you, though, about what I learned last week. I went to his Understanding the Threat, or a couple weeks ago, his Understanding the Threat seminar that he held here in Texas. He had one gentleman who's on his staff, who was there and spoke also, is named Chris Gaubatz. May not be pronouncing it correctly. G-A-U-B-A-T-Z. But this guy back east, Chris Gaubatz, went underground. In 2007, he began researching the threat of jihadi organizations in the U.S. by posing as a Muslim convert. He attended Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas conferences, got access as an intern to the Hamas-based organization Council on American Islamic Relations, CAIR, C-A-I-R. Everyone thinks they're just a nice, innocent group to promote understanding. They're not. They're directly tied to Hamas and Muslim Brotherhood. He worked in their offices. He also was trained in how to speak to the media. This is the Muslims in America training this guy. Here's how we speak to the media. I'll give you one tidbit. You know, after there's an Islamic attack of some kind in America, and people, imams and other representatives of Islam, will have a news conference, and they will say, you know, we deplore the killing of innocents. You know, our hearts and prayers go out to the family. We deplore the killing of innocents. This is a line they are taught to say because in Islamic teaching, non-Muslims cannot be innocents. So they're really just saying, you know, we don't care at all these people were killed because they're really not innocents. But they can say, we deplore the killing of innocents. The only person entitled to be considered innocent in Islamic teaching is a Muslim. So they're really saying, we're not apologizing at all. But they appear, and these, when I just told you that one little tidbit, there are dozens of things like this. And so Understanding the Threat is a organization mainly designed to train police officers, law enforcement, security officials to understand just the mindset of Islam, and that everything they teach, every word they teach, everything they tell you comes directly out of the teachings of Islam, directly out of the Quran and the other books used to train Muslims in mosques in around the world. They're not making things up. They're taking the words right from Islam. So this gentleman, Chris Gaubus, talked about that. Now I want to just turn and just talk to you a minute about where we are on the subject of Islam in America today and what happened in the Christmas market in Berlin in Germany before Christmas, December 19th, I think it was. This, what Germany did, what Western Europe did, is get duped by the rhetoric of innocent refugees, poor refugees, and they needed to be. And I'm not saying there aren't refugees who need help, but this is, Germany has now a huge problem on its hands, as does France, as does England, as does Austria, as does Belgium, all these Western European countries having that Western civilization, you know, love your neighbor, care for each other kind of thought. So they brought in all of these refugees, and now you have things happening of the kind of attacks we've talked about in the show many times. In Nice, France, you have a guy driving a truck on Bastille Day into a big crowd. You had, in just before Christmas, with Angela Merkel in Germany, you had a truck driving into a Christmas market. And the reason I mention this is because this is all part of and very consistent with Islamic aggression. This is not random. In fact, you know, some of the stories after the attack in Germany, there were talks about, well, you know, there's no evidence that this driver of this truck was part of a larger plot. There's no evidence that he was affiliated with a known terrorist organization. There's no evidence that he is part of a, there was foreign involvement. Folks, those things don't matter. I mean, okay, they matter in terms of investigating, understanding facts, finding other people potentially responsible. But they actually don't matter in terms of understanding the threat America faces. People who drive trucks into crowds, student who did this similar thing, drove his car into a crowd at an Ohio university. These are acts driven by the teachings of Islam. It's not that every Muslim is a bad person. Of course not. Most Muslims are peaceful. Most Muslims don't do these things. But it is the teachings of Islam itself. And this is part of what the Understanding the Threat people try to do, is help law enforcement and other people who are willing to listen to the truth understand the nature of the threat against America. Because if we have, and so turning back to Donald Trump and his, you know, his agenda, what he ran on, one point was to stop bringing refugees to America when we cannot adequately vet them. And this has been met with a chorus of hysteria from the left and from the media about Islamophobia and hatred and unfairness, and you can't lump people together, and, you know, it's hurtful, and all the rhetoric they came up with. But, you know, this is a hard topic for Americans to deal with, because we love our First Amendment. We love the notion of respect or freedom of religion. We love to think that we just, it's one of the most noble things about America, that we have people of all backgrounds, of all beliefs, who are free to practice their religion in our country. But where we are today, the reality we have to face is the question of whether or not we can deal with truth that Islam is a religion and it is a military movement. It is a political movement that demands that Sharia, the law, the radical, barbaric, evil law of Islam, must be spread around the world. All of those aspects of Islam are woven together like you know, threads in a blanket, like a sweater knit together. Islam is not just a religion. Woven in the religion is a political ideology that says you must conquer everyone else. You must kill or convert infidels. People coming to America from countries where Islam is the majority religion are raised in countries where they're taught by their elementary school teachers, their high school, their college, elected officials, imams, and leaders in their mosques, that it is the duty of an obedient Muslim to kill or convert infidels. These are the people we're talking about. We talk about refugees coming to America. I'm going to give you just a little bit of data about refugees coming to America, because it has been a radical problem in this last year and under President Obama. We are right now, fiscal year 2017, in terms of how the years are counted in this refugee process. In fiscal year 2017, in the first 11 weeks, so we're just started October 1st, the first 11 weeks of fiscal year 2017, United States has welcomed over 23,000 individual refugees, nearly all Muslim, from countries that potentially mean us harm. The big four sources of refugee countries that send bring refugees to America: Syria, Afghanistan, Somalia, and Iraq. And of those 13, let me back up and say, at a similar time last year, we'd only brought 13,786. Understand that President Obama is hurrying up. He's escalating. He's bringing more and more and more Islamic refugees to America before Donald Trump becomes president, putting more of this issue in our laps, issue of who among them is going to become the next, you know, truck drive killer, like we had, like Berlin had to deal with, or the many, many, many instances of Islamic terrorism around the world. And so this is a challenge that President Trump is going to face this year. How do you deal with this influx of refugees? Can you stop it? Federal law does say, by the way, that President Trump has authority to stop this immigration under the Refugee Resettlement, which, by the way, was passed in 1980, this Refugee Resettlement Act. It runs on autopilot. Congress doesn't even act. It runs on autopilot until President Trump stops it. So one of the many bold things we must do as Americans is support President Trump as we cease and desist bringing more Islamic refugees to America. Debbie Georgiadis, American Can We Talk. Talk to you in a moment. If there's one thing the conservative movement needs, it's a leader. And we have one, the Heritage Foundation. Heritage gets in the trenches on Capitol Hill. They promote principled solutions directly to lawmakers in Washington. And unlike politicians, they don't waver or compromise. But they're not a Washington institution. There are tens of thousands of Heritage members and supporters in North Texas alone. And they're on a mission to grow that number and build the conservative base. You can become a Heritage member by going to joinheritage.org today. I've been a member of Heritage myself for years. I have Heritage experts on my show, and I rely on their analysis to get the facts out. As a member, you'll get updates on the fight for America from Heritage President Jim DeMint, plus exclusive invitations to conservative events right here in Dallas or wherever you are in America. So join the growing movement. Find out more at joinheritage.org. That's joinheritage.org.
Texans have a long tradition of independence, and we don't like being told what to do, especially by liberal bureaucrats 1,000 miles away. That's why for 30 years, the Dallas-based Institute for Policy Innovation has fought Washington's efforts to take more of your money and freedom. IPI works every day to keep taxes low and freedom high, to promote free market health care, expand energy security, protect intellectual property, and combat onerous regulations that destroy American jobs. Politicians often talk smaller government, but then vote for more of it. By contrast, IPI has never veered from its mission to defend the Constitution and fight for freedom. If you want to be informed about free market policies and solutions, go to IPI's website and sign up. All of their information is free for sharing. Help IPI restore liberty and economic growth. Go to IPI.org today. That's IPI.org. One more time, go to IPI.org today.
On August 2nd, 2006, Debbie Lee was notified that her son, Mark Allen Lee, had been killed, becoming the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq. She had no choice about the news that was given to her, but she did have a choice how she responded. In response to her son's amazing last letter, she founded America's Mighty Warriors to honor the sacrifices of our troops, the fallen, and their families by providing programs that improve quality of life, resiliency, and recovery. Whether America's Mighty Warriors is hosting retreats for families of the fallen, helping heroes heal who are struggling with traumatic brain injury or post-traumatic stress disorder, providing relaxation at the Heroes Hope Home, stepping in when an injustice is committed, or doing random acts of kindness, As Mark mentioned in his letter, they know the price of freedom and who pays it. Our troops and families of the fallen need your support. Visit americasmightywarriors.org today to learn more. That's americasmightywarriors.org. Could you lose your career because of your faith? Could your pastor be sued because of his sermons? Can students and teachers be punished because of what they believe about God? Can the government or even your employer force you to violate your beliefs? Get the answers and, if necessary, legal protection from First Liberty Institute. First Liberty is the nation's largest legal organization dedicated exclusively to restoring religious freedom in America. In fact, First Liberty's nationwide network of top attorneys win over 90% of their cases. They've won at the Supreme Court all the way down to local schools. Visit firstliberty.org to learn more about how First Liberty is protecting religious freedom for all Americans in the workplace, public schools, your church, the military, and more. That's firstliberty.org. If you want hope for religious freedom and a free listing of your rights, go to firstliberty.org now.
Hey, 3 hours a day is all I ask. Join me, Sean Hannity, from 2 to 5 each weekday, right here on 660 AM, The Answer.
Can you hear us? And welcome back to America Can We Talk. As I mentioned before the break, we have a really interesting, just wonderful guest joining us tonight, John Guandolo. We have him on the line. Hello, sir.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Good, great to have you. I want to tell our listeners just a little bit about connecting with you recently in Texas, and then and a lot of what you do, and then I want to have you talk about your organization in a moment. But you know, there's a lot of political commentary in this world about radical Islam and what it does, and you have people who've read, you know, two postings on Facebook, or they've recently become familiar with the issue, and I think there's just a lot of people speaking before they know what they're talking about, but on the other hand, we have joining us tonight John Guandolo. I want to tell you just a little bit about his background, so then we launch into talking about understanding the threat of radical Islam. You'll know that he knows from whence he speaks. So he's a 1989 graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy. He took a commission as an officer in the Marine Corps. He served as an infantry platoon commander in combat in Operation Desert Shield and Desert Storm. He was a combat diver, a military free fall parachutist. You couldn't pay me enough money. And he's also a graduate of U.S. Army Ranger School. He's also, what is important to know as we get into our topic tonight, he joined the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, served in Washington office, conducted narcotics investigations, and then he began working, was assigned to the Counterterrorism Division of the Washington Field Office, and working there for over 5 years, developed an expertise in the Muslim Brotherhood, Islamic doctrine, the global Islamic movement, and the myriad terrorist organizations, Islamic terrorist organizations in this world, including Hamas and Al-Qaeda. So he knows a lot about what we're about to talk about, and he is the founder of a group called Understanding the Threat. And a couple weeks ago in Texas, I attended a program put on by John Guandolo and his organization, Understanding the Threat. And really, it is, I wish every American, especially people who are critical of our efforts to defend ourselves against radical Islam, could attend something like this. So now that that introduction, would you tell our listeners why you founded the group Understanding the Threat?
Yes, well, thank you for the introduction.
Sure.
It was a little over the top, but I do appreciate it. I was recruited out of the FBI in 2008 by a very unique portion of the Department of Defense to do strategic analysis. And the reason they offered to recruit me out was because they had been following my work for a couple years inside the DOD and knew that I was right on the mark, and that inside the government I was receiving a lot of flack from speaking truth about this. So came out at the end of 2008 and worked for about 3.5 years in kind of mid-2012 inside the DOD doing work and essentially going around speaking to 3-4-star generals and admirals, state leaders, law enforcement, you know, doing a little bit of work with international officers and other things. until the current administration defunded the work we were doing. And so I had to stand up a private organization that my hope was would do the same thing that we were, that I was already doing both in the FBI and the DOD, which is speaking truth to those people on the front lines in this war, specifically local and state law enforcement, but also to, you know, military, National Guard, business leaders, community leaders, religious leaders, people in the media that would listen, and still national leaders as well. So that's what we do, so that we can frame solutions to the problem, because the problem is going to be solved only at the local level. And while there can be national strategies, it's at the local level we're going to win or lose this war.
Well, I love that you said that. And it's very interesting because, you know, I mentioned to you, and I think I mentioned to you, one of the other speakers at your program, Understanding the Threat, that I attended in Texas a couple weeks ago, that, you know, my husband has many contacts. He has a works in an international business startup deal. So he travels to Israel a lot, travels the Middle East. He's very tuned in to the reality of the threat of radical Islam. But I think in America, and we read way too much about those kind of issues. But I think in America, there's kind of a cultural expectation that because we have freedom of religion and that we generally speaking are very respectful of individuals' religious choices, and we don't want to be critical of others. So the idea that there is something in America that we should treat differently than, you know, we have the Baptists and the Presbyterians and the Catholics and just all these different religions, and we all respect each other, but somehow we in America have to awaken to the fact that Islam is different in terms of not being just a religion, but actually a mixture of a religion, a political movement, a military movement. It's all melded into one, and I think that it doesn't always resonate with people, and so that they feel uncomfortable with the idea that we have to be very concerned about Islam within America. Do you agree with that?
I do agree, and I think the way you phrase that is helpful to begin the discussion, because I do find and have found for the last 10 to 15 years that this discussion, when you have this discussion with people, you're not just having a discussion about Islam. You're having a discussion, you're having to get through several layers to get to the discussion. So, for instance, you just said it. We have a belief that everything's the same, that when we talk about religion, we need to back off, that someone's individual beliefs are their individual beliefs, and you shouldn't say anything about it. Okay, that's a fair beginning point. But Islam doesn't teach that that's what it is. It doesn't teach it at the first grade, junior high, high school level, and at the highest authorities of doctrinal Islam. Doesn't teach that it is merely a religion. It teaches that it's a totalitarian system. It is a government. It is a social, cultural, military, political, religious system that operates under a codified law called Sharia. And that Sharia is without question directly and diametrically opposed to our founding principles in the Declaration and the Constitution. That's the problem. So if somebody individually wants to pray and have freedom of expression, nobody, including me, including Understanding the Threat, has ever said you can't do that. What we've said is when your system seeks to overthrow our government, which Islam does, and impose a different foreign law in place of our Constitution, that we actually, those of us that have sworn an oath to the Constitution, have a duty to protect and defend against that ever happening. And so do all of our leaders at the local, state, and federal level. And yet many of them have decided we're not even going to have the discussion because we can't get through that level. The other important thing I think that we need to talk about is that in today's society, the idea that there's something better than something else. I've
Amen.
Actually heard our leaders say that all cultures are have equal value. Well, that's just nonsense. Our founders didn't say that. Our law doesn't say that. And the fact that a pygmy culture in Africa or a cannibal culture in Africa is just as good as our constitutional republic is nonsense. And so the fact that Islam has things to offer and we have things to offer, this is a nonsensical. Look, our first war that Thomas Jefferson fought, that America fought after the Revolution, the very first war America fought was against the Muslims, the Barbary States, because Jefferson and Adams and the founders understood that Islam is diametrically opposed. They know it because they interacted with Muslim leaders who told them so. And back then, we actually had functioning brains that could reason and logically ascertain answers to simple questions. Islam is actually very simple when you break it down and read it and study it from a child's perspective. If you just read their junior high and high school textbooks, I think the vast majority of people would come to the quick conclusion that what ISIS and Al-Qaeda are saying and teaching is core Islamic doctrine.
We're speaking tonight with John Guandola. He is a founder of Understanding the Threat. And I do want to encourage everyone listening. He's agreed to stay with us through our next break, so we're going to go to a break in a moment. But I do encourage everyone listening tonight to go to the website Understanding the Threat and actually just Google that, John Guandola and Understanding the Threat, and read the information on their website, because these are things that is important for voters in America to understand, especially in light of the fact we've been treated for the last 8 years to the picture, to the storyline by some people in Washington that terrorists are distorting Islam and that they're perverting a religion of peace. Not so true. Come back after the break. We're going to continue speaking with John Guandola, founder of Understanding the Threat. And I want to turn out, we'll come back from the break, finish in these few points you're on, and then I want to turn to some of the current events and get your read on and how your reaction, given what you know about Islam. Don't go away. Come back after our break.
660 AM, The Answer.
America faces unprecedented threats to our national security. The Center for Security Policy, based in Washington, D.C., is a national leader focused on the organization, management, and direction of public policy coalitions to promote U.S. national security. The Center is a special forces in the war of ideas, dedicated to identifying opportunities and challenges likely to affect American security and acting promptly to ensure that they are the subject of focused national examination and effective action. The Center enlists support from executive branch officials, key legislators, and other public policy organizations, and brings these teams together to develop and shape policies that will keep America safe. Check out centerforsecuritypolicy.org for the latest news and developments brought to you by America's leading security experts. Becoming and remaining informed is one of the best ways every citizen can be a part of the mission to keep America safe. That's centerforsecuritypolicy.org.
The National Center for Policy Analysis brings together the best and brightest minds to tackle the country's most difficult public policy problems in healthcare, taxes, retirement, education, energy, and now national security. The NCPA works to develop and promote private, free market alternatives to government regulation and control, solving problems by relying on the strength of competition and the private sector. As America's think tank, the NCPA wants to make sure you have access to simple, clear solutions to the issues that matter to you. Come get to know the NCPA at one of their events and join the conversation by following them on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. To get policy solutions delivered straight to your inbox, sign up for the NCPA free email newsletter or subscribe to one of their policy blogs. To get involved with America's think tank, go online today to ncpa.org. The NCPA would love your support, and you'll love being part of the solutions to America's challenges. So go to ncpa.org. That's ncpa.org.
America guarantees each eligible adult citizen the right to vote. The Public Interest Legal Foundation, a 501c3 public interest law firm, is dedicated entirely to election integrity, to assuring that voter rolls include names of only citizens eligible to vote, and that protections are in place to prevent voter fraud of all kinds. The Public Interest Legal Foundation discovered that more than 1,000 non-citizens enrolled to vote in Virginia in just 8 counties. And in Philadelphia, felons as well as non-citizens are on the voter rolls. Non-citizens have been registering to vote and voting.
The Public Interest Legal Foundation is fighting nationwide and in Texas to ensure that only Americans pick American leaders. We are actively litigating high-impact cases to clean up voter rolls and protect the ballot box. If you do not want your vote canceled out, visit publicinterestlegal.org to join us in the fight to restore integrity to American elections. Protect your vote. Visit publicinterestlegal.org today.
Did you know that identity theft goes beyond what you can see on a credit report and what your bank can alert you to? Identity thieves can open new accounts in your name, rent or buy properties in your name, drain your 401k, and even file fake tax returns in your name. In fact, there are all kinds of identity theft beyond what you might expect. That's why LifeLock goes beyond credit monitoring to help protect your identity. We use proprietary technology to alert you to a whole range of threats to your identity. And if there's a problem, one of our U.S.-based specialists will work to fix it. Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But with LifeLock, you can feel beyond good knowing someone is looking out for you in all kinds of ways. Join now for 10% off. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code NEWS. LifeLock.
660 AM, The Answer. 660 AM, TheAnswer.com.
Can you hear? And welcome back to America Can We Talk. This is Debbie Georgiatis, and if you've been tuned in, you know we have on the line with us John Guandola, the founder of Understanding the Threat, who really goes around the country, first of all, informing people who really should know all these things that he has learned about the nature of the threat of radical Islam, how to recognize, how to talk about it, how to recognize threats, and how to deal with them. But he also does programs for civilians. I mean, the people, I want to have you tell our listeners again in a moment the kind of people you've trained, but being a mere civilian, I enjoyed being in your class a couple weeks ago in Texas. And one point you made, which was just so good, was the idea that when you are sharing with Americans what to be concerned about with respect to Islam, you're not pulling imagination, your own stories, your own biases. You're actually doing this. You are teaching based on the teachings of Islam itself.
That's right. I mean, when we talk about the Islamic network in the United States, we use facts and evidence from the largest terrorism trials. And lay that out. When we talk about Islam, we teach from the books that Muslims use in their schools and when they teach in their schools of Islamic jurisprudence. And then as you witness by being in the program, we put the microphone in people's faces and have them read to the audience. So they're reading right out of the book. And it's once people realize that what is taught in Islam is what ISIS and Al-Qaeda says it is, it rocks people's worlds, I think.
It really does. You know, I mentioned before the break, and I want to go back and just ask your comment on it. I have felt among the many things I did not agree with about the Barack Obama administration, and there were many, but one I really didn't was the effort, and really it started with George Bush. To be fair, it wasn't just Obama, but it started with George Bush. There was the effort to paint the picture that Islam is a religion of peace and that people who are engaged in Islamic jihad around the world, terrorist activity, are perverting or contorting the religion. And given all you've learned about Islam, was that an accurate statement?
Yes, and we have a YouTube channel, Understanding the Threat, that I encourage people to subscribe to. And a couple of those videos, we take comments. And look, UTT is not a political organization. On those videos, yes, we have Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Obama, but we also have, you know, Mr. Bush and Condoleezza Rice and others that have made these ludicrous statements. And the reason, just so your listeners are clear, the reason that our leaders do this is the very people that they are relying on for their information about Islam and the wars in which we're fighting is that we're relying on known Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, and in some cases, Al-Qaeda leaders in suits to tell us about Islam. So it's no wonder 15 years after 9/11, their heads are still buried far up in their netherworld, and we have lost wars in Afghanistan and Iraq because our leaders in the military and in the civilian leadership do not know what they're doing because they're relying on a non-factual understanding, a counterfactual understanding of what Islam is and what it teaches.
I love that you said not just non-factual, but counterfactual. And the thing is, you know, with everything else in life, it's like, you know, if you're fighting a disease, if you're fighting, fighting some faction, trying to understand why are they attacking, you try to dive in and understand why they're attacking. Why is this happening? I actually think that was one of the reasons that Donald Trump won the election this year. So won 30 states, won a significant electoral college victory, was that he wasn't willing to be politically correct in his conversation about Islam. He was saying, sorry, we have to actually vet these people. And if we don't have a good way to vet them, which we don't, that we need to stop bringing them here. I think that we're American people just relieved to hear someone say what they've said at their dinner tables around the country for years.
I agree with you. And I mean, you have to, in one sense, you have to laugh, but it's dangerous. Watching the news media today, discussing the events yesterday of the assassination of the Russian ambassador to Turkey by a Turkish police officer screaming, Allahu Akbar, a Muslim, and then Muslim, at least one, there could be two, but they believe there's now only one Muslim who plowed a truck into a crowd at a Christmas market in Berlin, Germany, killing 12 and injuring up to 50 others. We have people literally in our media talking, you know, why is this happening? What could the motive be? What ties all this together? I mean, the level of stupidity, ignorance, and quite just blindness, disconnection from reality. And again, when I mentioned earlier, this is one of the layers. Some of these people are intentionally avoiding it because they have an agenda. Some of them are truly dumb as a cinder block. But there are some of them who simply cannot see the truth because there is such a thick level that of I'm going to call it moral relativism, that they have grown up under. Some of these 30-something news reporters, and even in their 20s, they couldn't tell truth from fiction if you paid them $1 million.
Yeah, if it bit them on the nose.
That's right. That is a huge part of the problem. That's where we are.
It is sad that's where we are. And I think, you know, the term I've heard people use, and I think you use it at some point, too, is that willful ignorance. At some point, you can't just keep watching all of these instances of violence around the world, the attack at the Berlin Christmas market, the attack you just mentioned, a Russian ambassador, or I don't have that info. It was either ambassador, whoever he was, a Russian ambassador shot in public on television, and just say that these are all people perverting Islam. But here on the home front, here in America, you know, I think there are just some lessons that are just hard for people to take. But I want to mention one story that I really thought had a lot of good tentacles to it to help really open people's eyes. And that was a young woman, a Muslim woman who's 18 years old. She was in New York City. And she, to start the story off, claimed that she was on the New York City subway and that people wearing Donald Trump T-shirts mocked her and made fun of her and pulled her hijab off and told her to go home or go back where she came from. And it turned out the entire thing was a hoax, that hadn't happened at all. The police quickly figured this out because no one else saw it. And she made it up. But I thought what was interesting afterwards was, this young girl and her name, I had her name in front of me here a second ago, but her name, she was Yasmin Saweed. She's actually now been charged with filing a false claim, making a false claim in New York City, and she's been to court. Did you see the picture of her in court?
I did not.
Okay. She's a beautiful, I mean, really strikingly beautiful woman with her hijab on when she, the kind of stock photo, when she went to court, her brother was there with her. Her head was shaved. Now, she was afraid of her Muslim parents. It turned out she was late past her curfew, afraid of her parents, and her head was shaved, which was reported to be something that is a form of punishment, if not honor killing, but honor punishment on behalf of her parents. Have you heard of that before?
Yes. It's a form of shaming your daughter. I wasn't aware that it happened in that case, but I will say that there was another case and reported cases of that across the country. There was the woman in Louisiana at the university that claimed she was also attacked by people in Donald Trump T-shirts And when they found out, when she actually ended up under questioning, admitted that she lied, the police charged her. And this goes back to, we have cases where Muslims have vandalized their own mosques with the permission of the leaders so they could draw attention to anti-Muslim violence. This lie, and it is a lie, that there is as much right-wing, quote-unquote, violence in America as there is Islamic, a threat from the Islamic community, is nonsense. But this is part of the narrative, and it's being supported by the ACLU, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the current administration, and it's been given credence. This is a propaganda effort of just of massive proportions.
It's part of civilization jihad, that whole idea of, there is, of course, physical jihad and bombs and bullets and horrible things that have attacks committed by Islamic jihadists around the world and in America. But this kind of undermining of civilization in America, this trying to, in fact, we have the Clock Boy case going on here in Texas, which we've had people on. We're going to have people on again talking about it. There's an effort by Islam in America to silence people who would ever criticize Islam. And that's something that we have to fight back by speaking up, by not being silenced.
That's right. And that, as I've written about and have briefed leaders in Texas about, that was an operation from the beginning. And the mayor, the target of that was the mayor of Irving,
Beth Van Dyne, yeah.
To literally isolate her. And if you noticed, it worked. Now it's started. She's gained a lot of support back, but initially, when it happened, she was attacked from the political left as being, you know, violating civil rights and all this nonsense. But from the political right, the comments were, well, maybe the zero tolerance policy for police is not good, and so she's left standing alone. Exactly what the strategy of the enemy was. And this was a pre-planned strategy. It included Hamas in the United States doing business as the Council on American Islamic Relations. It was a very well, but in our longer programs, and certainly the programs for law enforcement, we detail how these operations work, and they're very important. And I just want to say this so people understand, they do violence so they can, so these Islamic organizations in the United States, which evidence in the largest terrorism trials have identified that all of the prominent Islamic organizations in the United States are part of the Muslim Brotherhood's movement, whose stated goal is to wage civilization jihad to overthrow the U.S. government. Those are facts. Those are indisputable facts. So when you look at a case like in France, where the priest is killed in July of this year, and at that church and at churches in the area, the immediate response was to move towards the Islamic leaders. The Christian and Jewish leaders moved towards them and lock arms with them in solidarity. That's how it works. They do violence to push you closer to them. So the suit-wearing jihadis say, oh, we're not them. We're not the guys sawing off the priest's heads. Come to us. It's what they're doing. It's an international strategy. It's a strategy at the local state and federal level here in the United States. And as I wrote just this morning, at understanding the threat, that the whole narrative of we, the suit-wearing guys, we're nice, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, these guys are crazy, they're mentally disturbed, come to us and we'll tell you everything you need to know. And it's working. It's working well. And the article this morning I wrote demonstrates that the interfaith outreach in the United States, and specifically in the example, because I got comments from Monday's article from law enforcement and others, that in Chicago, the interfaith outreach is being done.
I got to jump in. John Gwendol, I'm so sorry, but we need firm breaks.